everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Oi with the Terror. I'm one of your hosts, Danielle.
And I'm your other host, Sandra.
I need a cappuccino before this because I need more energy.
Yeah. It's been a week and it's only Wednesday.
Yeah. I might get like iced coffee later on maybe if I need it. Yeah, it doesn't feel like a Wednesday. It's also super gray and dreary out, and like that doesn't help with the mood.
It's supposed to be spring, and it's not.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't send you a photo. Our daffodils are out.
Oh, good.
They look pretty. They're like these like tall ones, but they only like come out in early spring. So by, like, almost summer, they're gone. But it's kind of nice because they're, like, a little bit of color at least.
Yeah. Now. Well, hopefully they survive this weekend.
Oh, yeah. It's going to get cold.
Cold and rainy and snowy in some parts of Mass.
Oh, no.
So. Mm-hmm. Yay.
The weather is weird now.
It just needs to make up its mind. That's all.
Yeah.
Although, I don't want it to go straight from this to, like, 85 or 90 degrees. I would, like, some days of mild weather would be nice.
Yeah. We're not ready for summer yet.
Mm-mm.
So, I'll jump into my topic.
Okay.
It takes place in Canada. Toronto, Canada. December 15th, 2017. A wealthy billionaire couple, Barry and Honey Sherman, are found dead in their home. They are found hanging from belts from the railing of their indoor pool. The brutal crime scene did not lead investigators to believe that a break-in occurred. Toronto police actually pointed toward a murder-suicide angle initially. So the killer or killers to this day have never been found. Barry Sherman was a well-known fixture in Toronto. He founded Apotex, Inc., a massive pharmaceutical company, and he was known to have a variety of enemies through his business dealings. Bernard Charles Barry Sherman took over his uncle's drug company, Empire. Do you say this like laboratories or laboratories? Because I say laboratory, and then Dave makes fun of me and says, it sounds like I'm saying Dexter's Laboratory. And I'm like, but that's how it's spelled. So I think that's how you say it. And then he laughs at me.
So I say laboratory.
Okay.
But I mean, you know, it's like words are weird. Like they can just be pronounced like different ways. But yeah, I say laboratory or lab. Well,
that'll be the last time I say that word.
Oh, come on.
So. It's now being deleted from my vocabulary.
You can say it however you want. Laboratory, lab. Well, it's like how the British say aluminium and we say aluminum. It's like, I'm pretty sure I just butchered that. So I'm sorry, UK listeners.
And how they say Z instead of Z.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So you know it.
Why is that?
I don't know.
From A to Z.
Yeah, it's odd. And again.
Okay. So Bernard took over his uncle's company after he died in 1967. Barry sold the company a few years later and started Apotex. He married Anna DeBray Honey Reich in 1971, and they have four children. By 2017, Apotex had over 10,000 employees and a yearly revenue of $1.5 billion. The company specialized in generic versions of big brand name drugs. They sold hundreds of products globally. Barry and Honey were known to be generous with their wealth. They supported hospitals, universities, political campaigns, and community centers in Toronto. They donated $50 million to the United Jewish Appeal, and they sent over $50 million worth of medicine to disaster zones from Apotex. Despite these noble endeavors, Barry also had a dark side. His company faced multiple lawsuits and controversies, including accusation of conspiring with other companies to artificially inflate the prices of medications. Barry's connections to the Liberal Party may have also caused conflicts with people. The federal lobbying commissioner launched an investigation into Barry shortly before his death over fundraising events he held for Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. Barry was also known for provoking people by threatening lawsuits. This increased the potential number of suspects involved with the Sherman's murders by the dozen. Some of these lawsuits hit close to home. In 2007, Barry was sued by his cousins, who claimed they didn't receive payment for their shares from the sale of Empire Laboratories. A legal battle followed with the cousins wanting 20% of Barry's interest in Apotex. Barry has reportedly offered his cousins millions of dollars in financial assistance after their parents died, but they alleged that this was a tactic to make them dependent on him and keep them from understanding their rights to the business. In 2017, an Ontario Superior Court judge ruled against the cousins, ordering them to pay Barry Sherman $300,000 in legal costs. Carrie Winter, one of Barry's cousins, expressed his anger at Barry in a 2018 interview with CBC, saying, quote, "He wasn't this loving, kind person giving money away, comma, pillar of the Jewish community. He cared about one thing, money, making lots of it and not caring who he destroyed, who he stepped on, or who he fucked over, like me and my brothers," end quote. So that's kind of intense. Carrie admitted he did want his cousin dead, but denied taking any part in the murders. He also revealed the year earlier he was ordered to make a hit on Barry's wife, Honey, actually at the request of Barry himself. But he said the plan was called off, but thinks that Barry decided to take matters into his own hands and killed Honey, and then killed himself in a murder-suicide. Carrie agreed to a lie detector test to answer questions about the arranged murder of Honey and actually failed it. And his lawyer advised against him taking another lie detector test, which would have had more questions pertaining to whether he was involved in Barry and Honey's murder. The Shermans were aware that they had enemies, and Barry even mentioned once in an interview that it wouldn't be difficult to hire someone to kill him, which is kind of like, when I read that, I'm like, interesting. Like, the thought that he was even thinking about that and maybe had some knowledge into that is like sort of intriguing, like, and brings up questions. The Shermans were planning on selling their house in the winter of 2017 and then were planning to go to a vacation in Florida. On December 13th, 2017, the Shermans met with a builder in Barry's office to discuss designs for their new home, and this would be the last time the couple was seen alive. 2 days later, real estate agents arrived at the Shermans' house to show it to potential buyers. The Shermans told the agents they would not be at home at the time, and there was a lockbox at the house so agents could get the keys and let themselves in for showings. It was then that the group stumbled upon a horrific scene that was basically out of a crime movie when the agents brought the people interested in looking at the house, like, to the pool area, the indoor pool. They found Barry and Honey hanging from the indoor pool's railing. The couple was fully clothed and arranged in semi-seated positions. This was such an unexpected and strange sight for the realtor and prospective buyers that they initially thought Barry and Honey were alive and were maybe doing some kind of yoga. And apparently they were posed intentionally to mirror a pair of sculptures from the Sherman's basement. The real estate agents also found Barry's gloves and the house inspection paperwork in the garage, which made it seem like he brought everything home from the meeting 2 days earlier, and they were maybe just getting home from the garage, and that's when, like, some kind of altercation started. And Honey's cell phone was found in a bathroom nearby, which made investigators think that she had tried to flee from the assailant. And to make matters more mysterious, there were no signs of forced entry. The Shermans also normally apparently kept their doors and windows unlocked, and real estate agents found a basement window and door left open the same day that they found the bodies. So the killer could have been aware of the house's layout and the fact that he knew that they often kept a door and window unlocked, so it would be easier for him to do what he had to do. So police initially thought that it was a murder-suicide. They thought that Barry murdered his wife, then took his own life beside her, but an autopsy actually proved that this could not have been the case. Postmortem examinations showed that both deaths resulted from ligature neck compression, a type of strangulation involving binding or tying. And marks on the Sherman's wrist suggested they had both been bound by zip ties. A pathologist found that Honey had been murdered in another part of the house and that her body was dragged down to the pool area, which could tie in with how they thought that, like, they found her phone in the bathroom. So if she had been killed there and then dragged to the pool, that would make sense. After 6 weeks of evidence review, investigators determined that both Honey and Barry Sherman had been murdered. To this day, no one knows who killed them. 4 years after the Shermans were found dead, the police released a figure captured on CCTV on the day of their murders. He's described as a walking man with an unusual gait, like G-A-I-T. The figure can be seen in the video passing outside the Shermans' home, but this person has never been identified. So I guess the potential motives circulating are like, or why people would want Barry dead, is perhaps he was killed at the behest of a competitor in the pharmaceutical industry, or perhaps someone seeking vengeance from one of his many lawsuits. Or the other, like, popular reason is that his family members, who one of them even said he would have preferred him dead. So it sounds like there are a lot of options. Even, I guess, another theory is perhaps an anti-Semitic hate crime. And it sounds like to this day, Toronto police are still pursuing leads in the case of the Shermans' mysterious deaths. And the house they were planning to sell was demolished in 2019. So I've heard of this before, like a few years ago, and it always seemed pretty interesting to me, partly because it's like still unsolved, but it just, there are like so many details in it that makes me wonder what could have happened and like if it was some kind of professional hitman versus, like, the fact that everything seems so clean kind of points to could have been a professional who was hired to do it. And then it's, like, basically like a crime movie. So I'm, like, so curious what actually happened. And I hope there are updates at some point.
Yeah, it's also interesting since it took place, you know, not that long ago that they couldn't really get anything like fingerprints or anything like that to narrow it down.
Right.
And it's also one of those things where it's like, this is why you lock your doors and windows.
I know. And the fact that they were that wealthy, I was very shocked by that. Like, I know Canadians are supposed to be nice and stuff, but, like, I was surprised that they were known to leave windows and doors unlocked.
Well, also, you said that they had a lockbox, too, for the realtor to
Right. come in. I know. So that's another interesting detail. Like, if someone was hired or whoever did it, they knew that and knew how to get into the lockbox.
Yeah. It's interesting because it kind of reminds me of a Hallmark murder mystery that came out a few years ago. And the person that did it was the realtor. but it's like the same thing. Like the person was trying to sell their house and potential buyers were looking at it and they went up to the bedroom and they found the original owner like dead in the bedroom. Mm. So it's kind of like that similar storyline. But I mean, I hope there are updates soonish or they can at least like narrow it down. But it does sound like maybe it was a professional, and it's also a very strange way to like kill them and then kind of place their bodies. Yeah.
Leave them posed.
Yeah. So right. It's just, it all, it's just a little weird.
I know. Like, yeah, the fact that they would go to that effort or like be artistic or whatever, it's like, I don't think that would just be a random person who just walked off from the street like, hey, I feel like killing someone. Like, they wouldn't do that. It would be someone who like was methodical and had already planned it or thought about it. Like, I don't think that would just be a random person.
But also because if there's no forced entry, it could have been somebody they knew too. So
right,
we'll just have to see.
Yeah, like, was it an angry business competitor or was it a loved one? Or there's so many options. It's a whodunit.
Yeah, it's also interesting that people can still kind of get away with murder even with today, since we're solving all of these old cases because of DNA. So maybe this is a case that'll be like that. Well, they'll solve it in, you know, 20, 30 years because they'll have the technology to do it.
Yeah.
Or somebody will fess up. Somebody has to know something.
I know. They probably just need to find the right people to talk to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not at all what I was expecting, but it never is. So mine is the Lincoln Park Zoo in Chicago, Illinois. I don't know if you've been there or know of it.
No.
Okay. So basically, the Lincoln Park Zoo opened back in 1868, and its first two living residents were two white swans that they actually received as gifts from the New York City Central Park. However, I picked this topic because apparently the zoo was built on the site of what was formerly the Chicago City Cemetery. And according to Illinois Haunted Houses, the Chicago City Cemetery was in operation from 1843 to 1859. And then it served as the final resting place for over or about 35,000 people. And the reason the cemetery's closure was because of its proximity to Lake Michigan. There was a public health official at the time by the name of Dr. John Raunch, who was afraid that the bodies could contaminate the lake, which served as the city's water supply via the Great Chicago Fire. So the bodies were being moved out of the cemetery, but when the Great Chicago Fire struck the city on October 8, 1871, it actually destroyed most of the remaining grave markers. So that made locating the bodies still in the cemetery very difficult. And there, it is believed that there are as many as 12,000 bodies that still remain under the zoo's grounds. The vast majority of visitors to the Lincoln Park Zoo are obviously there to see the different types of animals that they have, including chimpanzees, African lions, red pandas, and even a Guam kingfisher, which is a type of small bird, which there are actually no remaining in the wild population. However, while you're there, you might actually see a different type of visitor. So there are reports of catching a glimpse of some of the supernatural activity that have been reported on the grounds over the years. And according to the Illinois Haunted Houses, the most commonly reported apparitions of those are people dressed in Victorian era clothing. And it is said that these alleged ghosts do have a habit of quickly appearing and then they disappear, with some having seen them in mirrors only to turn around to find that no one else is behind them. And it's also said that one such Victorian garb donning woman is most commonly seen in the vicinity of the zoo's lion exhibit. So, again, if you are interested in going to a zoo, the Chicago Lincoln Park Zoo is definitely one of the more popular zoos, especially in the Illinois area. And it's one of the only zoos that I found to be haunted. And I picked it because it was also one of like a very haunted place, or one of the most uniquely haunted places, because when you do go to a zoo, you don't really expect to like see ghosts. You expect to see like lions and zebras and other animals. And I thought it was also interesting that it was built on a cemetery. So, because if you look at it, it's like a very like nice area of Chicago, but you can imagine that at some point there may have been a cemetery there. So it's a very interesting plot.
Is it like the main zoo in Chicago?
Yeah, it seems to be. Okay. Yeah. Hmm. It's a very popular zoo in Chicago. I think it's up there with like the Bronx Zoo, probably the Franklin Zoo, which is what we have here in Boston. So it's like a very fun place to go.
Actually, I haven't been to Chicago, but I've been wanting to go for a while.
Yeah, I've never been, but now I'm kind of like, oh, I'll add this to the list because I might see something.
It is cool to go to like those old zoos, especially when it's like a new city you haven't been to, because like the architecture and like design and stuff like that is fun to look at.
Yeah, especially one that's been around since like, I think it's at 1868.
Yeah. So
it's definitely not new, I'm sure.
It's old for the US.
Yeah, I'm sure they've done stuff to it, which may have, you know, when you do renovations, more things happen if it's supernatural. So maybe that disturbs some additional things. But no, I just thought it was like a little bit different, a little bit interesting. Because again, you go to a zoo, you don't expect to see somebody walking around in Victorian clothing. Mm-hmm. So.
Except at the Beardsley Zoo. You always expect that.
Yeah. So it should be, I don't know. It seems like it's also just a really fun place to go. But yeah. I've also never been to Chicago, so another reason to visit.
The Windy City.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which Boston sometimes feels like, but I guess Chicago beats it.
Right.
It's in downtown, yeah.
Now it's like New England. It's the, like the stormy, not city, but like...
rainy.
Region.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like downpour era.
We've become the new, like, Pacific Coast. It's like, what the hell? Yeah, it's weird. I think now we're getting more rain than, like, Seattle is.
Oh, really? So is it just always sunny there right now?
I don't know if it's always sunny. They've been getting rain, but I think we've just been getting more. Or we've been getting it more in, like, shorter bursts or something, or longer bursts. I don't know. But they're technically not in their rainy season yet, I don't think.
Oh, okay.
So, all right. Thanks, everyone, for listening to another episode. We download episodes on Spotify or anywhere really that you can get or listen to podcasts. You can find us on Instagram at Oi with the Terror. And like I said, we do post an episode every other Thursday. And if you do have anything you want us to discuss or any specific stories, you can submit those by emailing them to us at oiwiththeterroralready@gmail.com. And we will see you all next time.
Bye.